Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And I have to say this, you know.
You do have to. You're right.
I do. It's the Cinco de Mayo.
It is.
Yes.
Yay.
Yay. Well, it's kind of more of an Americanized Mexican celebration. Because over there, my family in Mexico is like, okay.
Yeah, no, my mother-in-law is going to the dentist today, and in fact, dental services in Mexico are open, for those of you who wondered.
Everything is open.
Yeah.
Everybody's working. But hey, here in the U.S., it's Cinco de Mayo.
Maybe we can make it like a national holiday and actually get like another day off. I'm down with that.
But, okay, so we have a show. We have a good show.
We do have a show. And, yeah. And oh, I remember the other thing, podcasts. If you like this show or want to go back and browse any of the other shows or want to share one of these shows with anybody in the whole wide world, because the internet reaches everywhere, KXORadio.com. And look for Let's Talk About It. Look for our podcasts, which are available at that website. So, good morning. Welcome. And we have a guest today. Her name is Alejandra Rodriguez. She is a social worker. High five.
Four.
I think you're high-fiving Alejandra for being a social worker. I was like, wow, there's a lot of joy today. The whole Cinco de Mayo spirit. All right. And she works for the Department of Social Services, which is a really, you know, appropriate place for a social worker to work. Right. Morning, Alejandra.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
I'm happy to be here.
And you brought a topic today, huh?
I did.
Could you open up your little bag there and show us what your topic is?
Well, today we're going to be talking about foster care. It is Foster Care Month, and...
May is Foster Care Month.
May is Foster Care Month.
You know, it's a good month to have, because, you know, it's like spring, everything's going, you got your tax refund checks, everybody's happy with who they are still, it isn't really hot yet. So, good month. I mean, did you pick that personally, or was that...
No.
It's a national, probably.
It's nationally known.
Yeah.
Mr. Foster himself dedicated it to me. Yes.
But foster care, what is, I mean, we hear foster parents, you know, kids are foster kids. What is it all about?
So foster children here in the county, in Imperial County, we have close to 300 foster children that are needing to be placed in homes while away from their biological families, whether it be their mother, father, grandparents, aunt, uncle. During this time, they're needing to be placed in a stable home. And so we look for families that are stable, that are willing to open up their hearts and homes to really a stranger, that they're not related to, that they're just going to open their home up to a child in need. And so that's what we're here for. We're here to, you know, find more families are willing to do that too. It's a big
responsibility,
and just you know, we ask a lot of these parents, of these foster parents, to be able to take care of a child that's not their own, and give them the love and the support that they would give their own child. And you know, there is a process. There's a background that is made. There is a licensing process that each home goes through to be able to get licensed and be placed with a child. And I don't know, ask me questions.
We will.
I knew you'd get to that.
We
eventually.
Will.
Thank you.
So, 300 foster kids. What does it take to become a foster kid? Mm-hmm. How does that happen?
A foster child, they're removed from their home, from their biological home, due to different reasons, due to drug abuse, domestic violence, homelessness. Sometimes if the family is not able to take care of the child.
It's like safety issues predominantly, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, do you know all these? I mean, you're probably aware of the cases. What have you seen mostly? Why are kids being removed? The majority, and then like the number one.
The majority are because of drug use, but the underlining is the economy mm-hmm. is low. A lot of parents lose their jobs. They're just down on their luck. Sometimes they turn to drugs just to relieve themselves from, you know, just not knowing what to do, not being able to support their family. And the drug use just overcomes them, and sometimes they lack parenting skills, and unfortunately the children suffer at the end.
Is it technically the drug use, or is it technically the unsafety created by the drug use?
The neglect that comes with a parent that is...
Because there's parents that might be using drugs. Well,
if you had
example,
every drug-using parent lost all their kids, you'd have a problem.
Hold on. Yes, exactly. Like, for example, there's many parents that drink alcohol. And that's...
Only when it doesn't interfere with their Vicodin use, okay?
Exactly. But they drink alcohol, you know. They have drinks every evening, you know. But I guess when it comes to a point that they're neglecting their children, you know, they don't, you know, there's no food because, you know, they're drinking the alcohol, but, you know, that can't say. There's a lot of people that probably use drugs. There's drugs that they use drugs on a daily basis, probably, but.
There are functioning drug abusers and alcoholics, but the difference is.
Neglect when it becomes.
When the child is not eating nutritious meals. Is not
supervised,
is left alone, is in danger because the parent is out of the home for whatever reason, or, you know, around dangerous.
Exposed to toxic byproducts of drug use.
Yes.
Including the active ingredient of the drug itself.
Yes.
How is that triggered? Is it the schools mainly, or how do you guys come into place?
You know what? It's the community. There's a lot of
neighbors. It could be a neighbor.
Worried, concerned neighbors. The school district is very good on keeping an eye on all the students. You know, family, friends, church. You know, if the family's involved in church, and you know, they just don't see that family come around too often, and you know, the community gets concerned and they make calls, and you know, people can call in, and if they're concerned about a child and their well-being, they can call in, and you know, we can investigate and see if that child is in danger or not, and then the steps. Then we go from there.
How many? So you've got three. You mentioned 300. You threw out 300.
About 300
per
it's
year.
About no.
Or at any given time.
Right now, we have about 275 foster children in our system.
So this is a kind of a rotating total
it
of people
is.
Going in and out of.
Well, there's some people that get reunited with some kids get reunited with. Their parents, or with other family members.
Yes. It's changing every day, just depending on each family has a case plan. And once they're completed with their case plan, then the child goes back into their home, and then they're no longer a foster child. And then things happen over the weekend. You know, kids come into our system. So it's always fluctuating, the number.
How many kids you don't know how many kids are in the Imperial Valley, huh? That's a kind of odd question, isn't there?
It's a lot.
Yeah, I was wondering, I'm just kind of
I go by
curious
school,
about
so
the ratio of foster children to non-foster children, and whether our county compares to, like, one of those big urban nasty counties like Los Angeles or something. And
can you imagine? That? I couldn't imagine how
many.
I don't know.
Are we hotter or colder or more quick to remove or easier to identify because we're a smaller community or less so because we're a smaller community? That's kind of was my curiosity. There.
I think because we are in a small community, there's a lot more eyes on the children. There's not so many children to keep track of because we're smaller. And I think
still,
we're
they
so
move
close
very quickly.
Knit.
It's hard to tell.
We're so close-knit that the community is, I think, faster to act on a child or, you know, a concern that they might have. So
so we may be more responsive to children's safety needs then.
I think so. I think the process may be quicker because we're smaller than we're
able to. Large, anonymous communities. Mm-hmm. So why do people move to an island? I thought they moved to an island to escape detection.
It's a vacation spot.
A vacation there.
From government authority.
A vacation
from utility bills.
337-8874 is the phone number. Her is Alejandra Rodriguez talking about the foster care system, and I think she's actually trying to like convince you, listener, to become a foster parent because the community could use your foster parenting.
You know what? I think, you know, well, it depends, but I mean, that would be interesting. That's something I would once I retire. Once my daughter's gone to college or married, or it would be nice to to...
do your empty nest thing, huh?
No, well, I mean, it's because I see so many kids who are... they're needy. They're just not... They grow up... While working at perinatal program or working at the adult alcohol and drug program, you know, a lot of parents come in with their children to get assessed, and it's just like, God, you know, just for... Right, they haven't recovered, but you know that once the parent recovers, they're going to be a good parent. But right now, they have some, you know, they have to get the recovery. They're using, and that during that point, you know, children need services. And I just look at them, and they're so cute, the kids that come in. They just, oh, it breaks my heart. You know, I know that if they're with me right now, they'll be okay. They'll be safe.
It's a staple.
You know, and the kids love their parents. But, you know, the parents also have to get the recovery. They have
work
to get...
Work on themselves.
They work on themselves. And I've seen it at perinatal, when women would come into the program. You know, they would bring in their kids, and kids would be dirty. They would be hungry. And we would provide snacks for the children. We had, like, a little daycare with them. And by the time that the women graduated from the program, the kids were eating. They were clean. They were dressed. They were, I mean... The kids didn't even, when they would come in, they would kind of would smell. And when the women graduated, I mean, they were more involved with their children. They would play with them. They were healthy.
Yeah.
So, that was my...
That was a statement, not a question.
Yes, it was. But, you know, just, you know, what are the qualifications to become a foster parent?
So
can anybody just... become a foster parent?
Well, anybody can come in and get information and get started on the process. We have an orientation where we sit down with you and just go over what it is to be a foster parent and what is required of the foster parent. And there's a screening process, and we do a background fingerprinting on adults. All adults in
no
the
criminal
home.
History.
Well, you know, there is some criminal history that is okay. There's things in our past, you know, speeding tickets, DUIs, certain things that if a certain amount of time has passed, then we look over it. So I don't want people to be, you know, put off by
history.
You know,
okay. Felonies, are you still okay, or does it depend on which felony?
It depends on how long ago it was, what the felony was,
okay.
Probation, off probation.
We're closer to the line now. Huh?
Okay.
You know, because I don't want people to think, oh, never mind, I got a speeding ticket, I didn't qualify. No, we work with each person individually. And so the fingerprinting is done. You get a medical background to make sure that you're healthy and strong enough to take care of a child. You have to be... able to support a child. You need your bills to be covered, and you need to be living well enough to take care of an extra child in your home. You have to have.
Are you going to pay for it? Come on.
Well, it's a stipend. It is voluntary to become a foster parent.
Mm-hmm. And voluntary to accept the stipend.
Yes, and but this money goes to. Raising a child.
Yes, right.
So, which is nowadays it is expensive. And so the money that's given is to cover clothing, shelter, food, you know, extra food, the extra gas you're going to need.
Toys.
PlayStation DX, yeah.
Well, no, they need toys.
And also, where was I?
If you get a 12-year-old foster kid, they could probably give you a list every month of what they really wanted with their money.
They really do. Mm-hmm. And they want a basketball court, and they just want... the best and biggest.
And they even found a contractor to install it. You know, the paving.
No problem. It's all done.
Everything with their phone. With their smartphone.
Oh, and you have to pay their cell phone bill. Yeah. So, also, space in your home. So, you can be renting. Renting is fine. If you're renting an apartment, renting a house, that's fine. You can own your own home. We have to make sure that there's room, that you have room for an extra child. Certain ages can share rooms. Siblings of different sex, if you have a home and you have a son and a daughter and they're over the age of 6, they're not able to share a room together. So they need their individual room, and plus you need an extra room for the foster child. And you can have up to 6 kids, including your own children, in your own home. And just...
There's no age limit to become a foster parent?
There's no age limit. To say, but they do
because we have teen parents. Why wouldn't we have teen foster parents, right? 12-year-olds.
Or even elder, you know, older grandparents.
Oh, you guys were talking about the old end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Is there a young end of the spectrum
18.
Limit?
They have to be an adult, 18.
Well, that doesn't work with real babies. Come on.
Well,
that's totally unfair.
That's a whole topic. Yeah, that's a different topic. Teen pregnancy is a different topic.
Well, but so if you really want a baby, become a teen foster parent, and then you don't actually have to have your own baby. You can just kind of experience it for a little while, and if it works for you, then you can raise a family of your own. And if it doesn't, then you already know, and you didn't make the mistake
of
jumping into it.
You know, becoming a teen parent is not, sometimes, most of the time, it's accidental. Lack of education.
And they're not really ready to be parents. Not from the grown-up
the foster
point of
parent
view, anyway.
The foster parent is a different. It's a choice to make a decision. To make, the adult makes a decision. You know what? I'm going to become a foster parent.
So, no high school.
I'm
going to
help. I'm going to help the community.
It's not work study.
It takes what is it? It takes a village to raise.
Yeah, it's a village full of foster parents, as it turns out. Okay, so we're going to take a top-of-the-hour break, and we're here with Alejandra Rodriguez. She's a social worker, and we're kind of talking about all things foster care-ish, including the foster parent side of it. So we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio with Scott and Maria, and we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. And a reminder, our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
And if you call right now to be a foster parent, we'll give you...
Alejandra's here.
What did you bring for all the...
information.
A shiny pin.
She'll give you her one and only pen. Make sure and catch the podcast on KXORadio.com. And now, armed and loaded, Alejandra will give this podcast out to everyone who needs information about foster care. Mm-hmm. It'll be your new presentation.
That must be it's hard. It must be hard to get foster parents.
It is. And one thing that I didn't cover earlier is you can be a single parent. Mm-hmm. It's okay if you're just a mom coming in and wanting, to become a foster mom.
Dad
or
too?
Or a dad coming in.
Or just
to
a
be
single
a foster,
somebody,
a
single
not
person.
Not married.
Not having kids.
Person. Even, people that have partners, two men, two women.
The gay, lesbian,
in,
bisexual, transsexual.
We're open to that. I mean, as long as they have a stable home, as long as their home is, licensed and safe for a child, we don't have a problem with that.
Do you get a lot of people knocking on the door saying we want, like that, those old commercials from that store that would go open, open, mm-hmm. open?
Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of people, that are wanting to become foster parents, and I'm hoping with this will kind of open the eyes to the community to let them know that we do need good foster homes, and we are always looking for foster parents. And sometimes they get lost in the screening process. Sometimes they get lost in the whole process because it takes about 2 to 3 months, depending on how quickly the forms are turned in, how quickly the medical the physical is turned in, just depending on how quickly, the social worker and the prospective foster parent works on getting everything turned in. The process is a little lengthy at times.
Mm-hmm. I know when I had my own kids, they didn't come with an instruction manual.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still looking in certain cases. Yeah. Do foster parents get some sort of specialized training and support?
They do.
Support, yeah, and that's important.
Initially, to become licensed to be a foster home, there is 12 hours of training that the foster parents are required to complete. They are first aid and CPR certified. And throughout the years, and so the following year, they need to complete 8 hours of training. And there's always training out there about, parenting skills, nutrition, different topics that the foster parents are able to go to. And needing to go to...
So, like, continuing education units.
Yes.
Only, like, the foster care version.
To keep their license.
Uh-huh. How different to become a foster parent and be a foster parent. You have to take all those classes. But as parents, they, like you said, nothing's required. The difference is... It would be nice, all parents.
It would be nice to prepare parents before they have...
I know. It would be nice if I would have gone to a class and found out... what to do when my daughter was born. I had no clue, no idea.
I thought we could just put all the parents, in a big state with a large fence and food and housing for, you know, the first 5-6 years, so the kid's on stable footing, and then bring them back and say, okay, now you can go work on your jobs, your careers, or updating your Facebook status or whatever you need to do as a young adult now that you've kind of provided the initial grounding for your kid to be a happy, successful person themselves.
Yeah. But continue what Scott said regarding the supports that Department of Social Services provides to foster parents. Do they provide services, let's say, that, you know, you become a foster parent and of a teenager. And, you know, teenagers, your own teenagers, it's difficult to raise teenagers. Well, it's
you
not difficult. It's a challenge.
Kids aren't all like brand new infants.
You know, it's a challenge.
I'm
already having a challenge raising a 4-year-old. So, but, you know, just if something happens at home, does the foster parent have support from social services or?
There is a social worker that's assigned to,
okay.
To each foster home. Each foster child. So they have the support of the social worker that looks over the child, that the child is on, you know, on their caseload, so they have that. And they also have a social worker from the licensing unit, so if they have any questions about the home, you know, repairs or anything of that nature, or if they're moving and they need to get their license changed, or if they want to foster more children or change the age of their foster child, then they have the support of the licensing social worker. So everybody at DSS, we all try to work together to keep that communication and that, you know, that help and that support for the foster parents. It is difficult. A lot of foster parents, you know, give up or, you know, it's difficult. So they say, you know what, I'm not able to do it anymore. And I think a lot has to do with...
What are some of the things that contribute to the difficulties?
Just not understanding the baggage that this child is coming with.
Especially if this child was exposed to domestic violence, to drug use.
There's a lot of things that this child is going through. And some of these children do have therapy, are able to see a counselor. Some are on medication to help them if they have a learning disability.
May not be on medication and may benefit from medication.
May benefit from medication. So there's different parenting styles. There's, you know, I see a lot of times, there's parents that have had their own children, their children are adults now, but their children never had these issues. They never had a rambunctious, wild child, so they have no idea how to deal with.
Well, they know, I mean, just like, for example, the what has this child been exposed to? Yeah. You know, if they were neglected growing up and they had no structure at home, there were nothing, parents were gone, you know.
You can train a rambunctious child to be rambunctious.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. But if you have no experience with, you know...
Detraining them.
Yeah, if you have no experience, you think, wow, this child is just bouncing off the walls. But sometimes children are like that.
And they're entitled to a certain amount of distress because the process that we have done to, quote-unquote, protect them...
You take them away from what they know.
It's a stressful process.
You know, that's all they've known. That's all they've known. They grew up in that environment, and they grew up with their parents. Like I said, a lot of them even... Maybe parents were neglectful, but a lot of the kids still love.
They do. They have a very strong bond
to
their biological parents. They do.
And you take them away from that.
I can't imagine how being taken from my home to live with a complete stranger in a complete strange home. I mean, that's difficult in itself.
That's very traumatic.
In and of itself, that's right.
Yes,
very traumatic.
And plus, they miss their parents. They do. Whatever type of life they had, they miss it either way. Some of these children need to learn how to, you know, eat at a table, have dinner. They need to learn how to dress themselves and to feed themselves, you know, to take baths, be hygienic, you know, how to take care of themselves. And
others have been taking care of their household for years, and they need to learn how to be kids again, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Sometimes they're parentified because they have little ones that they've been watching over and they just forget about who they are and because they're so worried about their younger siblings.
Yeah. So foster parents need to be prepared for a wide range of possible foster children.
Oh, yes.
And whatever special needs that those might present.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sounds like if that were the case, then having... integrating into all the various systems and supports throughout all of the agencies would be real critical to this process,
It is. And there is support. And it's just, the foster parents needing to reach out. And
actually, we did. We just got, I work with specialized mental health programs, and we got a referral from a foster parent and has two siblings, and they referred him directly to us. They called us up, which I was so happy.
Assertive foster parenting.
Yes, an assertive foster parent, seeked us out and got, it was through probation. Probation, mm-hmm. Told them about our program, and, we're gonna provide services. So, for foster parents, they can always call us at Behavior Health. And actually, it's one of the populations that the state of California is the transition age foster youth that state of California is saying that a lot of services aren't being provided for these transition age foster youth. And those are the 16 to, 19, I'll go all the way to, 21, or in this case, until the age of 18, the teens, the 16, 17, 18-year-olds that require services. But going back with parents, our foster parents, do foster parents come in and say, I want to become a foster parent, but I only want to take care of babies?
And that's okay. They are given an option of what age range they want. Some people pick 0 to 18.
Happy babies that sleep all night.
Beautiful, happy babies.
Yeah.
And, or you could pick a newborn. You can pick, a teenager. You can choose, you can choose your age. Your ages. You can choose if you want a female or a male. Just depending on, how it is at home.
You can state preference, basically.
You do. Mm-hmm. You have a preference.
Is there a greater need in certain age groups?
I would say there's a greater need in the teenage area, because a lot of people do want brand new babies. And sometimes the teenagers are kind of,
they're not brand new babies, I can tell.
They're not brand new babies. And they're a little bit more difficult to deal with.
What do you do in those cases that, you don't have any, all the foster parents have kids in their homes, and you end up, children are removed from the parents, and there's no place to put them right away with a foster parent? There's no...
They stay at your house while they hunger, right?
What do social workers do in those cases?
We hope that doesn't happen. We hope that they don't stay in the receiving home. We have a receiving home here, and they're supposed to stay there up to 24 hours, and it is
a transitionary unit.
Yes, it's until they're found, a biological family is found, or some relative is found for that child to go into, or a foster parent.
So how big a census then of foster parents do you ideally keep stable, basically, of foster parents do you keep so that you're able to meet the needs of the 275 or so foster kids on a daily, monthly, yearly basis?
Wow.
How many foster parents? You must almost need more.
We do, because we need emergency foster homes that
especially to hold transition kids.
Yes, that are willing to get that phone call at 2-3 in the morning and say, we have, a set of three siblings.
And hold on to these kids for 3 weeks or 2 weeks while everything gets sorted out.
And here they go, and here they are at 3 in the morning, and you need to have space available for them. So we do have emergency placement foster homes. We have long term. We even have foster homes that are willing to adopt. That at the end of it all, if the child doesn't go back to any relatives or they're not found a home with biological family, then they're able to be adopted.
But you're first when a child is removed, do you try and locate right away?
We do.
A family member.
Yes, that's the priority, is to get them back with relatives, and. Second priority is to make sure that home that is found, that's a relative, that they're safe,
mm-hmm.
and that this child is going into a safe place.
Maybe it seems intuitive, but it seems like the least amount of social structure disruption that the child experienced would be preferable in terms of the kid not acting out more or suffering less or something, right?
Yeah.
So with that in mind, do schools become magnets for recruiting foster parents so that, if a child's removed from, my daughter goes to Harding School, if a child's removed from Harding School, some other parent that they may even know because they, it's a community school and et cetera, from that school district, could go ahead and have that child in a foster capacity, mm-hmm. and then the child would not even miss a day of school, and maybe not even anybody in their school would really.
That would be ideal.
That would be ideal. It's not that quick.
Is that a strategy that's been adopted yet, though? Or do we? I mean, you could go to PTA meetings mm-hmm. and say, "Hi, I'm the foster parent lady, and we need you."
Well, you know, it's. I know where you're going, because first of all, it's traumatic for a child being removed from the home. Second, it's traumatic because you take them away from the school that they've been going to and their friends. And now you place them, you know, they live in Brawley, but the foster parents here in Calexico or in El Centro, and that must be. I mean, the ideal thing, like you said, is getting them where they're going to the school, have them stay there, make it, you know.
At 2 o'clock in the morning removal, and then the next day, they may be a little tired and have bags under their eyes, but they're still going to the class.
Yes. It is very important that the child stay in their school. Because if that's what's stable, mm-hmm. we're trying to keep their stability in their life as much mm-hmm. as possible. So because they're moving to a different home doesn't mean they need to change schools.
Mm-hmm.
They've established themselves there. They have friends. They know their teacher. It's a safe place for them. So we make every strides to keep the child in their school.
What degree of success do you have?
We do. And that also depends on the foster parents. If they're willing to transport. And sometimes if the foster parent is in Calexico and they've been going to school in Imperial, we have foster parents.
So as a Harding parent, could I go in and say, hey, I want to be a foster parent, and I want to be a Harding foster parent. So any elementary age kids that you take from Harding school that need this service, I'm willing to house those kids. Would that work?
You could go through the process and become a foster parent. I'll sign you up at the end of the show. So, yes, you can become a foster parent, go through the same process.
And then indicate a preference for local.
And then just be involved.
For people within my basically regional community, in terms of not that I want a teenager or a baby or twins or whatever, but that I want to serve the children that go to school in the school district that my children go to.
Yeah. So then that would be your part, to be involved in the school and just mm-hmm. be an active parent and spread that.
Well, it would be what you'd get, it seems like, is you'd get this regional connection, this mm-hmm. community connection
yes.
that would allow the child to experience minimal disruption.
Yeah.
Because they're really still living in the same mm-hmm. general school district mm-hmm. area. They're still attending the same school.
Yeah.
They don't miss a day.
It goes back to that again. It takes a village to raise a child, mm-hmm. a community to raise a child.
And we do all year long do school fairs. So we're very involved in the schools and being out there and meeting the children of each school and meeting, you know, the administrative staff and, you know, keeping it very close to our community and our schools to spread the word of, you know, what it is to become a foster parent.
Yeah. Neat. It seems like that would be real effective.
I know. But, okay, so going back, if somebody's listening right now and they want information, or where do they get the application? Application, or can they get an online, or what is the process?
Do
you have a Facebook page they could like?
Well, the thing, like, for example, going and getting, you know, the sentry, you know, I got it, but, you know, a while back. But there is a process.
Easy to say, not so easy to get.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I had to take all these documentation, you know, and I had to get myself. It took me like a week to gather everything, you know, just to get a sentry. But I mean, what is the process? They go through a training, but before that.
Mm-hmm. So I recommend starting off with a phone call. 760-482-2000. That's the number to...
Well, that's easy. 482-2000.
To Children 2000. And Family Services. You asked to speak to Rosario. She helps with the question. There's a questionnaire, just a brief... your address.
Almost.
Yeah, it's a very short screening process of, you know, your name, your address, who lives in your home, how much space do you have, and why are you interested in becoming a foster parent?
Because I heard it on the radio.
Yes.
Yes.
And from there, you're given an appointment for an orientation to go more in depth into what exactly it is to become a foster parent, what are the requirements. And that is 2995 South 4th Street in El Centro at the Social Services Bill Deans with Child and Family Services, Suite 101. That's where they would go for the orientation.
Question. We have a large Hispanic population here. Do they have to be bilingual or can it be monolingual?
It could be strictly Spanish, mm-hmm. strictly English, bilingual.
I got a question. What about TANF recipients? Could they be foster parents?
As long as they're stable with the income that they're receiving, that's fine.
Neat.
Well, there's a time limit, isn't it?
Yeah.
So. But that involves in the process, in the application
process.
So
people without jobs who have families of their own who are receiving state benefits for those families in the meantime while they're trying to find employment might be able to.
But as long as they're able to provide.
If they're
their
stable.
Own children.
Well, if they're exempt, for example, and they have small children already, they're exempt, they're going to be at home, they could also be at home exempt and be a foster parent.
Yes. Yes. If that's something that they're interested in, it is having another child in the home.
More the merrier.
Do social workers go randomly and supervise, inspect the house and kind of do surprise visits?
Yes.
And just to see that everything, because you hear all these horror stories.
I know.
You hear these horror stories, especially when it's not California, Florida. But foster children disappeared and they don't know where they were at. But I don't think that happens here. We're a small community. But, do they do that? Randomly do surprise visits or?
The home, when a foster parent has a license, they are. There's visits to make sure that they're in compliance with the licensing regulations, to make sure that the home is still safe. Sometimes there's additions that has to be up to code.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there's always visits. There's a visit, visits from the social worker that has the child on their caseload. So they're constantly in communication with the foster parent and with the foster child. These children also have visits with their biological family, with their biological mm-hmm. Parents or whoever that they're meeting, visiting with. They have visits sometimes weekly, sometimes, twice a month. So there's constant communication with the social worker, the foster parent, and the foster child.
Is that trade-off, I guess, of a little bit of privacy necessary to become a foster parent? Is that a turnoff to some people?
It is, because but that's why you have to be willing to open up your home, not only to the child
but to
the
agency.
Social services. Because we are able to come to your door anytime we'd like, and because there is a child is our responsibility that is staying with this family. So yes, they need to be very willing to open their doors to us at any time.
In the middle of the Lakers game, fourth quarter, score tied. You're like, oh, he's knocking now.
Sad. And then you mentioned that foster families receive a stipend, and it goes to their clothing, food, or totally
shelter, care,
but
electricity.
Electricity. But what about medical care? I mean, it's especially because it's so expensive.
Yes, their medical and their dental, vision, everything is covered by Medi-Cal.
Okay.
So, nowadays, it's difficult to see a doctor and, because of the time, the expense, everything. So these children...
Well, Medi-Cal's evolving, huh? I mean, there are now some services that Medi-Cal doesn't support. With kids, it still covers almost everything,
yeah.
huh?
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, the reality is with Medi-Cal is you're going to be in a pretty crowded doctor's office.
Unfortunately, it is.
Full of sick kids.
Okay. Yeah. We're not so small. Once you're at the doctor's office, the community doesn't seem so small then. Yeah.
You get the whole neighborhood in here.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But it's, we need foster. In other words, there's a need for being foster parents.
Yes. Good foster parents.
What are the payoffs? You've worked with foster families for a while. What do you see as being the primary rewards of doing this job?
I really feel that it's a calling. It's something that is in someone's heart. I really appreciate when people think about it for a long term, because that shows me that they're going through everything, that all their changes in their life, that all the changes that may happen in their life if they become a foster parent. I don't, when someone jumps into it, it kind of...
It could be like a foster parent affair.
It's like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, they...
But then they realize, like, oh.
Yeah, then reality sets in.
Flavor of the month or something.
Yeah, so I like it when they think about it. When I meet with them and they're, okay, and, you know, give me your number, I'll call. I've been, you know, and it's just something that they feel that they should be doing. It's an idea, and they just kind of sit on it for a little while and think about it. And I have a lot of experience with foster parents that have a very strong faith. Mm-hmm. Because I really feel at the end of the day, that's what gets people through the day sometimes when they're having a difficult time with the child or difficult times at home.
Certain charitable sense to being a foster parent, too.
Yes.
You're really supporting your community in ways that you're not really forced to. You're offering up your
house.
You're offering your time.
You're a volunteer, and it really has to come from the heart.
Your energy is apparent, et cetera.
Yeah.
And there is a stipend, but that's
It is very minimal of what's left over once all the bills are paid.
You need 83 foster kids to actually make profit. And licensing wouldn't let you have that many, so there you go.
Yeah. So it is, like I said, it is a calling. It is needed. It's something that, you know, if the children find good foster parents, they're placed with good foster parents, and imagine what their life can be changed.
I've got a really odd
question.
Cultural competency. You've got certain kids with certain cultural backgrounds and needs and preferences, and you know what TV shows they watch and all that other stuff that goes into culture. Do you worry about that, or is this just scramble mode? We're going to put you anywhere.
We try our very best to match a child to a home that we feel that they will do well in. We don't want them to be more traumatized than they already may be. And so, you know, if they're Spanish speaking, we try to place them with a family that's Spanish speaking,
and vice versa.
So we do try, we do our best to match them with the best home for them.
Is there a way to assess culturally who they are, or do we just kind of, eyeball it?
No, I mean, we have time. You know, we get to meet the child, we talk to them, get a background, and then, we meet the parents, the biological parents. So we have a good idea of
what they would like and need and be most comfortable with in terms of syncing up. Cool.
Good.
All right, what's the phone number again?
The phone number is 760-482-2000.
And for a limited time, if they say they heard about it on Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness in Imperial Valley, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health, you're offering them anything? A chance to be a foster parent.
A gratitude, the gratitude from the whole community.
Yes, and a chance to make a difference in a child's life.
Yes.
And just feel that being rewarded with knowing that you made a difference in a child's life.
Well, that's a tremendous offer. Okay, so you heard her. Call the number, tell them you heard about it on the radio, and you're going to get that chance to make a difference in a person's life. Alejandra, thank you for coming aboard today.
Thank you.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
I know. She was a former behavioral health, so.
Okay.
So now we're going to go to another special episode of Maria's Community
Calendar. No. Just,
by.
You know what? I just got this, and it's the World AIDS Day. It's Stop AIDS, Universal Access, and Human Rights. They're going to have the World AIDS Day, or the WAD, W-A-D, is having a planning committee meeting this Friday, tomorrow, May 6th, at 5:30 at the El Centro Clinic, which is located at 651 Wake Avenue, at the Women's Department Conference Room. Again, the WAD Planning Committee is having a meeting today, which is the World AIDS Day. Not today, tomorrow, Friday, at 5:30 at the El Centro Clinic, located at...
So, like, public's invited to that, or...
They need donations. They have a fundraising committee. All interested community members are invited to... Yes, especially if they've been, affected. A family member has got HIV, AIDS, so... Yeah, and also next week, I have the calendar for next week. I have the Adolescent Alcohol and Drug Programs. They're going to be talking about treatment and trends. There's been a lot of new trends happening. The kids finding other drugs, or some of them have not been put as illegal yet, but there's some trends going on.
Well, that's going to be an interesting
show. The bath salts, the one that a famous teen singer was caught smoking.
Well, that tune in and learn about all the new health hazards out there lurking in the creative teenage mind.
Yes, exactly.
This is Let's Talk About It. Have a great weekend. I'm Scott.
And I'm Maria.
And take care.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.